What's up, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Plant the Spear Podcast. It is officially game week, and I couldn't be more excited. I've already had a couple cups of coffee this morning. I've already watched a Florida State War Chant video about 10 times, and I'm pumped. I'm ready to go. This is one of those episodes you just look forward to. We're going to go through the schedule game by game. I'm going to give my thoughts, quick analysis, and then make a win-loss prediction. And I think this is one of those episodes you just get excited about. And, you know, it also makes you a little nervous, too, because I can see a couple of different outcomes for this team on both ends of the spectrum. And we're going to cover a few things related to that before we get into the breakdown, just kind of giving some of my thoughts on what could happen, what couldn't happen, why I'm excited, and why I'm still hesitant. And then we'll just get into the full breakdown. So I'm pretty excited. I hope you guys are, too. I'm ready to see Florida State back in Dope Campbell Stadium, even if it is against Duquesne. I'm just ready to hopefully get the first win since 2016. It's been entirely too long. I'm just ready to have something to look forward to for Florida State football. And I think this year can be a year that's worth being excited about. So with that said, let's go ahead and get into it. First thing, like I said, I'm going to kind of go through and just do a little bit of kind of couching everything and where everything's going to set up. So I am excited about the potential of this team, and that, like, I feel like the ceiling for this team, as I go through the record, I've been sitting here telling myself, like, man, don't do that. Don't do that to yourself. I run into every season just bright eyed and like, we got a real chance. But I also have watched the last 2 years. So I know that you do have to pump your brakes a little bit and not let your excitement run too wild. However, if you can't be excited about what your football team could accomplish while being realistic, then, I mean, what are you watching for? So with that being said, I am excited about what the starters on this team, and they do have better depth this year, but I'm excited about what the starting 22 on this team can do. I think that if Florida State, one of the biggest things, obviously, is they have to stay healthy, because if they get too far into their depth chart, then the season could go off the rails rather quickly at a few key positions. Like I said, they have better depth now than they did last year or a year before, but there is still a drop-off at a lot of positions in talent level and experience. And, you know, if you really want to try and have like an 8-9 win season, even 10 wins, who knows, you can't really be relying on unproven players. You need the starters in the game, especially Jordan Travis. And then, so that brings me to kind of part number two of what this whole season being a success predicates on, is the potential that we see in these transfers and a lot of the other players has to turn into production. Obviously, a lot of the guys like Johnny Wilson, Trey Benson, and Micah Pittman are ones we're excited about, but they don't really have a whole lot of receipts over their career to go, oh yeah, we know we have a 1,000-yard receiver sitting right here in our hands. But again, when you look at sometimes that doesn't mean anything, because Andrew Parchment came in last year and had an 800-plus-yard receiving season at Kansas. And, I mean, he didn't even put up 400 yards last year. So that doesn't mean these guys can't have a good season, and that doesn't mean you shouldn't be excited about them. It's just you got to keep that in the back of your mind until we see it on the field a few times. And I really think we're going to learn a lot about this team in the first 2 weeks. Obviously, if they come out and struggle against Duquesne, let's just, you know, fold the whole thing. It's probably going to be a bad year, and we might be looking for a new staff, because this game shouldn't even be remotely close. If they come out and just smack Duquesne and then roll into LSU and either win or have a really hard-fought close game, then I think we will learn a lot for the rest of the season, and that's when you'll kind of know that this Florida State team has turned the corner, which is something that I think is going to happen this season. I think they're going to have a better season than expected if all these things go right, and I think that they'll get back to a winning season and get back to a bowl game. And so, like I said, first off, you got to stay healthy. You got to have availability. You need your starters. Secondly, you need production or potential to equal production from a lot of the transfers. Like, you have guys like Bethune, who I'm not really worried about making a lot of tackles. But again, we need to see some of the names from the wide receiver group. Most importantly, do something production-wise on the field, because that killed Florida State last year, just not having a good receiver group. And lastly, the third thing that I really think that is just so important right now for this team is we cannot wait until the fifth game to get their stuff together. You can't be like halftime through the Louisville game, you know, like last year, 0-4, and now all of a sudden we figured our defense out. They have to start game one. I mean, maybe you could get by with a little rust in game one against a team like Duquesne, but you better be ready for game two. There can't be this half a season of messing around and whatnot. You got to get your guys in position and roll with your guys that you feel confident with, and you got to be on point from day one. Of course, there's going to be some adjustment period. You do have some changes, you know, as far as offensive coordinator and whatnot that will have to be adjusted for. But again, it's year three now. You got to be ready for the challenge, and you can't wait till halfway through the season to do it. The reasons I'm excited: defense came in as one of the, I think it was top 10 units for PFF last year towards the end of the season is the way they graded out. And they have the potential from what we saw at the end of the season to carry that over. Of course, you lose. Obviously, you always have to say they lost a first-round NFL draft pick and Kier Thomas, who was a very solid college player. They also return a lot, and they also added some pretty exciting pieces. So I think the defense, if they just don't get off to that slow start and they carry over what they did from the end of last season from game one, I think the defense is set. So now you're really kind of just more worried about the offense. And why I still think this offense has a lot of potential left in the tank, if you listen to the offensive preview, you'll know what I'm about to say. So when you look at Norvell's career offensive stats from prior to FSU, compare that to his time at FSU, he has 8 seasons of data as offensive coordinator or head coach, basically where he's in charge of the offense and calling the plays. And at Florida State, he has 1 full season and a COVID year, which I get it, everyone went through that, but it did stunt their growth. It did hurt their install. So in my opinion, they haven't met his averages yet, his career averages. They've been pretty far off. They've left over 100 yards a game on the table, you know, and a bunch of touchdowns that they just have not met his career averages yet. And in my opinion, the offense is more likely to trend in the direction of 8 years of production receipts rather than 1 in a COVID year. So when you look at the numbers, and this is why this is important, when you look at the numbers for Norvell's career averages prior to FSU compared to the 2021 FSU offense, and I use that because the COVID season was hard to get like reliable stats on. So just looking at how it would have finished nationally, the 2021 FSU offense in passing yards finished 101st, whereas Norvell's career average would have been 15th in the country. Passing touchdowns were 62nd. His career average would have been 17th. Rushing yards was 58th. It would have been 25th. Rushing touchdowns was 65th, and his career average would have been 20th. Total yards were 94th for Florida State, would have been 8th in the country last year. Total touchdowns for Florida State was 69th. Norvell's career averages would have finished 10th in the country. So obviously, Norvell's offense could have been top 25 in the country, in some instances top 10. And you're just not getting that production. And obviously, we know that a lot of that has to do with the offensive line play. The receivers out wide just have not been good. They haven't had a threat of a good receiver that can take the top off a defense. And that really, I mean, when you look at Norvell, he's only had 1 season without a 1,000-yard receiver. So last year, nobody broke 400 yards. And that's not going to cut it. I know that has a lot to do with who's throwing the ball, but if you listen to the offensive preview as well, you know that I think Jordan Travis is underrated as a quarterback. Obviously, them messing around with rotating snaps and everything for something they should not have done probably cost them a few games last year for certain. And, you know, there's nothing to guarantee that this offense is going to be back to that level right now. There's nothing that says the pieces that are on the roster can get to that level. But when you look at Memphis, I mean, he had Brady White threw for, I think it was 4,000 yards in 2019, Norvell's best season at Memphis. I mean, who is Brady White? He doesn't play in the NFL. He didn't win the Heisman or anything like that. If he can do that, then how come these quarterbacks here can't do that. And I understand that the defenses in the ACC are better, but not all of them. I mean, Wake's defense is not good. You know, look at a couple of the other defenses. They're average, but they're not dominant. You got Clemson, NC State, and, you know, Boston College had a really good passing defense. But other than that, there's no reason that Florida State shouldn't, with the pieces in place and with now more time with install, now with Jordan Travis having a full spring, a full fall, and a season, most of a season of experience, there's no reason that they can't get back to those numbers. And that's why I'm excited about what this team can still accomplish. I think they still have a lot of potential left in the tank. Whether or not they achieve it is still yet to be seen, but it's there. And so that's why I'm excited about the season. I already got myself probably a little too pumped up. I'm probably drinking a little too much Kool-Aid when I look at the final results of what I'm looking at. But when you go game by game, there's a lot of questions on the other teams that make these games winnable for Florida State. And I don't think that, you know, Florida State is obviously not the only team with questions. And now we have at least had some time to do some install, to get some things in place and all that. So I think that there is potential for Florida State to have a better than projected season. But like we said, you got to couch that, because I could see as high as 10-2, and we're going to get into why I see that. I could see as low as 6-6, and we'll get into why I see that too. With all that said, let's go ahead and just start the schedule breakdown, starting with game one against Duquesne. So last year, Duquesne played one Power 5 opponent, and it was against a TCU team that ended up finishing the season 5-7. In that game, they actually shortened the second half to 12-minute quarters, because from what I read on a write-up about the game, they said that it was more of a concern for player safety because Duquesne was pretty much gassed, and they said that their head coach said that a lot of their depth is more like Division III players, and so they just don't have – they wouldn't have been accomplishing anything, so they just rolled on with it. So anyway, they lost 45-3 in that game, and Duquesne only put up 137 yards of offense and gave up over 400. They also lost two of their really big impact players. One was a receiver, Cyrus Holder, and he had 629 yards of receiving. That was over double any other receiver on the team. No one else even broke half of that. So he's gone. He actually went as a free agent to the Bears, I believe. And then they also lost their second leading rusher and leader in all-purpose yards, who combined, those two accounted for 42% of their total production last season. So sure, they do return their quarterback, but, I mean, this isn't Jacksonville State. This is Duquesne. They don't have depth. They don't have a whole lot of talent. And I just don't think the staff's going to mess around with this game. I think they know after the Jacksonville State game that they need to come out and prove a point that that was a one-time mistake. And I think they're going to try and run it up a little bit and get the backups in and just use this as a tune-up for LSU while also not completely overlooking it. So I don't think we need to spend too much more time on this. Give me FSU big over Duquesne. I'm gonna tack some scores on the end. These are just for fun, because it's so hard to predict the score of a game. I'm just gonna throw it out there for fun. Obviously, I would almost like to watch the first 2 weeks and redo this after the bye week when we know a little bit more about these teams. But just for fun, we'll throw a score on the end. It's more about whether I think they can win, they lose, and what's their chances. This one, give me Florida State 52-6. There will be a little rust. They might give up a couple field goals, but overall, I think it's a blowout for Florida State to start 1-0 and roll into LSU for week two. In week two, they got LSU for a big matchup Sunday, prime time, the main game on that day. Everybody's going to be watching, all eyes on Florida State LSU, and I think this is a really exciting game. I think it's going to be a really good matchup. There's obviously been a couple developments lately that make you feel a little better. So last year, LSU was not great on offense. They were 80th in scoring, 102nd in efficiency, 96th in explosiveness. They lost 85% of their rushing production from last year, and they just received news. Now, of course, it's going to be appealed, so we don't know whether he'll for sure be out or not. But all signs point to currently John Emery Jr., their former five-star senior running back, is going to be out for the first two games, including Florida State, obviously. And so now they will rely on Penn State transfer Noah Cain to come in, who's a bigger back. I mean, he's a load of a dude. But when you go back and look at his stats, he had about, I think it was like 350 yards last year. He averaged 3.3 yards per carry. And he's going to be behind an offensive line that has question marks. And behind that, I mean, they don't really have any proven production to go on. This is a hit for them. And I think that that gives an advantage to Florida State, because now you're basically relying on one running back who had some okay production at Penn State and hasn't carried the ball yet at all for LSU. Obviously, like I just touched on, their offensive line, they lost a lot. They basically are rebuilding. They have a lot of questions on the offensive line. It's probably their biggest weakness from what I've read about the whole team, which matches up well for Florida State when you have probably your strongest unit being the defensive line. Last year, LSU was 54th in pressure rate allowed and 111th in sacks allowed. And again, they lost most of their offensive line, so you already had subpar numbers and you're kind of rebuilding the line. Now, of course, that doesn't mean they can't improve, obviously, but like we said, this is one of the biggest weaknesses. Now, when you move to quarterback, you have Jaden Daniels, who obviously we know now is going to be the starter. And, you know, he really had a good season in 2019, but 2020 and 2021 weren't near as good. And I'm not sure if that had a lot to do with Arizona State, his game, whatever the case may be. But, I mean, he is a good he's a dual threat quarterback that can run pretty well. Last year, Arizona State, he had 844 yards rushing, but he also had only 10 passing touchdowns and had 10 interceptions. He hasn't thrown for over 300 yards since 2019 and only threw for 200 plus yards in 5 of 13 games last year. And so, I mean, I'm sure he's going to be better with a better receiving core that he's got at LSU. He's also going to be facing a lot tougher defenses. So to me, I'm just not really sold on him as a passer. I think obviously you have a lot of similarities between him and Jordan. They're both good runners. I think Jordan's a better passer. And when you look at their receiver group, now they're probably going to be a handful to guard, and someone's going to have to count. Someone's going to have to count for Kayshon Boutte. I hope I said that right. And who is a really good receiver, and there is a lot of hype. He's already being talked about, you know, as being one of the top receivers in the country. He is coming off a season-ending, pretty severe ankle injury. I think they said he had 2 surgeries. They've been bringing him along well. So that's not to say there won't be some rust in the first game. I looked at his just raw numbers without watching his stats, and I don't want to sound like I'm downplaying him. But he has a catch rate of 74%, a drop rate of 7.5%, contested catch rate of 37.5%, and 5 of 16 career games with 100-plus yards. So, I mean, I don't know, you know. Is he going to tear us up in the passing game with a guy like Jaden Daniels throwing him the ball behind, you know, a shaky offensive line? I mean, maybe not. I think our secondary is pretty good. I think they probably will break one. They probably will get one on us, I'm sure, because he is a talented receiver. And Jaden Daniels is an experienced quarterback. And like I said, in 2019, I think he had over a 70% completion percentage and had like 17 touchdowns to 5 interceptions. So the potential is there, but you know, that's probably going to be your toughest thing to defend, obviously, is the pass. Another thing that is worth pointing out is LSU lost a veteran kicker last year, and now they're turning to a true freshman. If we think that this game is going to come down to the wire and maybe who, you know, makes or misses the most field goals, while I'm not the most confident in our special teams unit yet, I do think that, I mean, having a true freshman kicker could be a liability if the game came down to the line. As far as our defense goes, this is obviously their strongest side of or strongest aspect on the team. Their front seven looks like they could be pretty legit. I mean, they do have a lot of new pieces to replace. It is a new scheme they have to install. They have a lot of transfers and whatnot. They did lose their leading tackler from last year at linebacker, who was a 100-plus tackler and one of the leaders on this defense. And so I think the potential is there for this defense to be pretty nasty. I think it's going to be hard for us to block their front seven, because while I think our offensive line is better, I think they're still probably about average, especially if we're getting into the depth chart already a little bit. So that's something that I'm a little concerned about, being able to block their front seven. But again, they lost a lot in the secondary. They only returned 2 players with any kind of experience, but they, like I said, they did acquire a lot of talented DBs through the portal, But, you know, they haven't played at LSU yet. They haven't played in this defense yet. And Florida State gets them game one with a tune-up game. And one thing I've said about the LSU game so far, if this game was in November, there's probably a good chance I would choose LSU to win. Brian Kelly has typically been a good head coach in year one at new programs. He's usually added about 1 to 2 wins, you know, per season from their previous records. But I think you just have so many new pieces. You have new things being installed. Coaching staffs have to gel and learn how each other, you know, work together. And there could be some mishaps there. You could see some busted assignments just from everything being so new. And you would hope in year three that Florida State is the more polished team. And LSU also has their fair amount of questions either. And I know LSU fans have been trying to come after FSU Twitter like they're going to win another national championship. And I'm sure they'll be fine in the long run. But right now, I mean, look at their defense last year was 71st in scoring defense, 65th in total defense, 71st in efficiency, 98th in finishing drives, 46th in havoc rate, 87th in third down defense. So, I mean, it wasn't spectacular last year. And I understand you'll probably get a coaching bump because you have a better staff in place. But again, I mean, you still got a lot of questions to be answered. So for this one, I'm so on the fence. I really am. This one's so hard to choose. To me, I think just when you look at the matchups, I like the way Florida State matches up. I think that the loss of the running back is big. They suspended the DB2, but he wasn't projected to be a starter, so that really doesn't make much of a difference. I'm leaning towards Florida State. I think it's going to be a close one. It's going to come down to the wire. I know it's in New Orleans. I know it's neutral site, which is basically a home game for LSU. Last year, their away record was 1-5 in either away or neutral site games. So I don't know how much that really makes a difference if they're not in Tiger Stadium or not. It's, you know, they just weren't good away from Tiger Stadium last year. So to me, this is going to be a close nail biter. You won't be able to look away from it for very long. I think it's going to, you know, I think it'll be mostly low scoring because the defenses are both the better units. But I think that because it's the first game, it's a big game, there's going to be nerves and excitement. I think they're going to bust some shots. I think we'll get Jordan Travis will probably run, you know, break free for a few runs. And I think they'll probably bust a few in the passing game. And I think Florida State will come out on top. Give me Florida State 24-21. Maybe LSU misses a key field goal with their true freshman kicker. And if that is the case, that would be an absolutely massive win for Florida State. I know it wouldn't mean a whole lot if you dropped the Louisville game right after that. But again, beating rebuild or not, beating a SEC West branded team who's got some preseason hype. They are, I think, 10th in ESPN power rankings and 20th in PFF power rankings. So people expect a lot out of that team. And so I think if you could get that win, that would be huge for recruiting, huge for the fan base. You start 2-0 going into your bye week. You ain't going to be able to tell us nothing going into week three. Now, week three is another game I'm on the fence about. And to be fair, this season, there are so many coin flip games. I think there's so many games that can go one way or the other, depending on how Florida State shows up to play, how the other team shows up to play. I think they could go either way. And Louisville is another one. I don't exactly like going up there for a Friday night primetime game. I know that Louisville Cardinal Stadium, whatever they call it now, is not the most daunting atmosphere. But if you watched a game where Clemson traveled up there a few years ago, where it was a big atmosphere, I mean, it was a pretty good atmosphere. So it's not to say that it's not nothing. It's not like going to Wake Forest or Duke or something like that. I mean, they're probably going to show up for that game. They obviously have Malik Cunningham, who is their offense. And to me, he is one of the most underrated players in college football. Last year, he put up over 4,000 yards of offense and almost 40 touchdowns. He's a very gifted runner. He had over 1,100 rushing yards last season, and his passing game is getting better. Now, one thing that a lot of people seem to be overlooking when they predict us to lose this game, because a lot of people are, is they got their receiver room raided by the portal last year. They lost 3 of their top 5 targets in the receiver room, which were all their best players in that group, obviously. So you look at what is Cunningham going to be able to work with when he comes back this season as a passer. They did bring in a guy from Central Arkansas who was a 1,200-yard receiver last year. And while that's nice, is it going to translate to the Power 5 level? What is the depth like behind him? They might have one good guy, and then they don't really have anyone else that scares you. obviously, that remains to be seen because they could have another breakout candidate. But right now, it looks like receiver depth is an issue, and they're relying on a guy, you know, who hasn't played at the Power 5 level yet. They do have a good tight end. He was, you know, Marshawn Ford, he was a consistent target. He had zero drops and was tied for the third highest contested catch rate in the country last year. So he'll be a load to cover there. And then they did add a Tennessee transfer, Tyon Evans, who was on pace to be one of the better backs in the SEC before he got injured. And so, you know, again, it's like LSU. They have some pieces, but we just don't know what they're going to do. They don't have a lot of proven production similar to ours, where you can just go, uh-oh, well, that guy's going to be a problem. So then when you look at the Cardinal defense, they had a lot of veterans last year, but they weren't great. They were 77th in scoring defense, 84th in total defense, 84th in both pressure and havoc rate, 112th at finishing drives. They were 96th in EPA per pass and 95th ranked passing defense. So they definitely have, you know, they were below average last year, and they have a lot of room that they need to improve if they want to have a good season. Now, they did add, I think, six players through the portal on the defensive side to kind of shore that up a little bit. Obviously, you know, they got Jarvis Brownlee Jr. from Florida State. They added him as well, and they have some pieces that they're excited about. But again, until you see it, you know, they're only projected to win 6.5 games. So obviously somebody's not that high on them for some reason. And I think that this is a very winnable game, especially when you consider Florida State has a bye week. They'll have already had a tune-up game, a big test, a bye week to get an extra week to prepare for Louisville. Louisville is going to be coming off a game playing UCF. And if you watched that game last year, it was a barn burner. It was a hard-fought game. So they're not going to be able to look ahead to Florida State. They're going to have to focus on UCF. And who they might be coming off an upset, if you consider that an upset, of course. So, to me, this is a very winnable game. This is another coin toss game. You know, I'm worried about how Florida State plays on the road. I'm worried about Cunningham, them being able to contain him. But when you look at last year, I mean, they were on pace to spank FSU, and then they finally figured everything out on defense and shut Louisville out in the second half. Florida State also outgained them in that game by, I think, 60-something yards. So, I want to pick. I initially did pick Florida State to win this game by something in, like, more of a shootout-type score, something like 30 to 34-30 Florida State. But then I keep telling myself, well, I mean, they're probably going to lose to somebody, and you've already got them at almost, like, 10 wins, so... But again, I mean, when I just look at the schedule and I be honest with myself, this is an imminently beatable team for Florida State. But, you know, maybe there's a little bit of a letdown. Maybe they lose to Louisville. I don't know. I still think they can beat this team, even on the road. You know, we'll see. And, of course, when I make these predictions, I'm obviously predicting this as Jordan Travis stays healthy for pretty much the whole season, along with everyone else, and they bring their A game. And I think if they can do that, you know, tell me why that Louisville team is not beatable. You have a good quarterback, and, I mean, that's really it. He is their offense. He is their production. He's like Sam Hartman to Wake Forest. Wake Forest went from a 10 to 11 win prediction or projection down to some people are thinking 6-6 or 7-5 with Hartman being out indefinitely. Now, they say he's going to return, but nobody knows when. If something were to happen to Cunningham, the same thing is going to happen to Louisville. They're probably going to fall off a cliff. So that's just something to keep in mind when you look at this matchup, is their whole hope is tied to what Cunningham can do this season. And, of course, they can improve in other areas, but, you know, I think this is a very beatable team for FSU. Next on the schedule is Boston College. You get them at home this year. We all know last year that they had a lot of help from the ACC refs doing what ACC refs do. They made a lot of horrible calls, which all seem to go Boston College's way. Normally, I don't even like to consider that as an excuse. However, if you watch the game, I mean, you know how bad it was. That aside, looking at Boston College, again, you have statistically last year, their offense was, I mean, it was just awful. They were 112th in passing success rate, 98th in passing efficiency, 93rd in scoring offense, 103rd in total offense, and they to be fair, they played a pretty weak schedule too. Obviously, you know, throughout the season, Phil Jurkovec got hurt and he was out, and then they thought he was going to be out for the season, and then he came back, but he was inconsistent at best, and you know, they had kind of put all their chips into the table on him. And even when he came back from the injury, maybe he shouldn't have come back yet, but he just was very inconsistent. One of his worst games came against Florida State. He had a 41.7 completion percentage and only threw for 148 yards with one touchdown and one pick. Of course, now they do return most of their production at receiver. Obviously, they have an explosive target in Zay Flowers, and they also return a 1,000-plus yard rusher, which, you know, Boston College is always known to have some pretty good backs. But the thing is that you have to look at is they have to rebuild their entire offensive line. They lost four guys to attrition last year, and then the one returning starter they had, he tore his ACL in preseason, and he's going to miss the whole season. So now they have an entirely new offensive line in front of an offense that was terrible last year. So I'm sure Jurkovec will probably have a better season this year, because he does have the physical tools to be a good quarterback. But, I mean, replacing your entire offensive line that, you know, really wasn't that great anyway, that's definitely not a recipe for success, as we've seen at Florida State. We know what it's like to not have great offensive line play. Boston College usually seems to have kind of an offensive line factory. They always have good play in the trenches, usually on both sides of the ball. So I don't know what they're going to bring back. If it may be good, it may not. But when you have to replace your entire offensive line and Florida State gets them relatively early, you obviously know that that's going to be a liability in their offense that really, again, like we said, wasn't that good last year. When you look at their defense, they had a good pass defense last year. They ranked third overall. They returned most of their players. They were 16th fewest in passing touchdowns allowed last year, 27th in completion percentage allowed. So they had a good passing defense. But ironically, Jordan Travis had one of his best passing games against Boston College. He threw for 251 yards, 3 touchdowns, and 0 interceptions. So that, I mean, you know, he was able to handle it last year with the third overall passing defense. And they also do have to replace a 4-year starter at cornerback who led the team in interceptions, so that's a question mark. They were not good at pretty much anything besides pass defense. Their rushing defense was 92nd in the country, 101st at havoc rate, 96th at pressure rate, 96th in sacks, and 107th in tackles for loss. So they have a problem creating pressure, which bodes well for our offensive line and negative plays. And then they don't stop the run well, which Florida State is a run-heavy team. So that is a matchup that I really like at home against this Boston College team. Of course, BC always seems to play Florida State tough, but, you know, you're not on the road on a Thursday night on a red bandana game, which is always something, you know, crazy happens. So to me, this time around, I think that both teams will probably be improved, but I think Florida State is going to be the better team this year. They're going to be the more polished team with a better offense, and hopefully the calls aren't so bad this year, one-sided anyway. And so to me, I think FSU wins with a little breathing room in this one. Go ahead and give me Florida State something like 31-20. Next on the schedule is Wake Forest, which this requires two predictions for one game. Obviously, you have one prediction for with Hartman and one prediction for without Hartman. Wake Forest had a prolific passing attack last year. But on the arm of Sam Hartman, they averaged 41 points a game, which was fourth best in the country. They were third in third down conversions, fifth at finishing drives, seventh in EPA per pass, and they had an 11-win season, which tied a school record for the most wins. They had 2,000-yard receivers, one of which does not come back, so there's a question mark there. I think he had like 1,100 or 1,200 yards, and he's not returning, so you have a hole to fill there. But they do return A.T. Perry, who was a absolutely outstanding freshman. They also lose an all-ACC offensive tackle and their leading rusher from 2021. They return about everybody else, but again, you have the question mark of Sam Hartman. Is he going to be back? When's he going to be back? Knowing our luck, he'll probably be back for the Florida State game, and I wish him well, and I wish him a speedy recovery. It's not about whether, you know, it's not about his health, because that's more important than who we face or not, but it is it would be an absolutely massive loss for them, especially when they've already announced that they're turning to a sophomore in Mitch Griffith, who will be quarterback for them in Sam Hartman's absence, and he has 2 pass attempts during his entire career at Wake. So that's a huge difference, because Sam Hartman, he generated their offense. He's great at running that delayed RPO. He is a good runner. He had over 500 yards of rushing and 11 touchdowns on the ground. So without Hartman, you're just taking the heart out of their offense. So to me, if you get Hartman back, that's going to obviously change the outcome. So we kind of have to do 2 predictions on that. When you look at the defense, Wake defense is nothing near as good as their offense. They were 91st in total defense, 107th in efficiency. They allowed over 42 points in 5 games last year. They do have a new DC this year. They do return 6 starters. But at the same time, they just don't have a whole lot of talent, and they don't have a whole lot of depth on that side of the ball. And they also lost their veteran kicker, Nick Skiba, who has been one of the best kickers in college football. His replacement is a redshirt freshman. So they had a lot of close games last year. And if they don't have Hartman, I mean, they might not even have close games this year. But if they do have some close games, that could be another thing to watch. Of course, we know that the last meeting, FSU, they didn't fare well. Wake won by 3 scores and put up almost 500 yards of offense. But again, Wake travels to Tallahassee this year. And in my opinion, if Sam Hartman is not here for this game, does not play in this game, I obviously lean heavily towards Florida State. I think that they are going to win something like, 34-17, because Wake does still have some weapons, and they will have a few games to get the replacement quarterback kind of in a rhythm. But I think Florida State wins comfortably 34-17. If Hartman comes back and... maybe if this is his very first game back, there's obviously going to be some rust. You obviously have to get back into game shape. And I would still lean towards Florida State there in maybe a shootout type game, 34-31, something like that. But if, say, for instance, Hartman comes back and he's had a game or two to get back in rhythm and shake the rust off before Florida State, and it looks like they're just back to firing on all cylinders like they were when he was there, then I kind of just think in a battle of offenses, I think Wake Forest has a better offense. I think Florida State has by far a better defense, but I could also see Wake edging Florida State out in a shootout like 34-31. I think this game will be closer. I think it is losable with Hartman there. I think it's very much winnable without Hartman there. So if he's not there, give me Florida State for the win. If he is there, depending on when he comes back, I'll probably lean towards Wake Forest, but we'll just have to wait and see. That one, again, you just really can't say right now. Now, if you guys are keeping score here, that means I pretty much have Florida State with the potential, there's no guarantee, but with the potential of starting 4-1 and 5-0. I mean, is this real life? I promise you guys, I'm sober while I'm recording this. I have not had any strong beverages or anything. I've not fallen off my rocker, so... It's a possibility. The thing about this Florida State team is when you look at the pieces they've added, when you look at the potential that's there, if they play up to that, if they play their A game in every game, looking at the holes on the other teams, I mean, why can't they win the first 5 games? You might have questions against Louisville, Wake Forest if Hartman's back, and LSU, but, I mean, according to matchups, really, in my opinion, I think all those games are very much winnable. Will it happen? I don't know. There's always off weeks. There's always a chance that Florida State just doesn't, they come out flat or for whatever reason, or, someone has to miss some time or something. So there's a lot of variables because there's a lot of coin flips. But again, the potential is there to have that explosive type of start for Florida State. And I just, I don't see why not. Tell me why not. Prove me, prove my theory wrong why they couldn't, when you look at all the holes and all the question marks of the other teams. Obviously, like I said, we'll know a lot more about all these teams in the first week or two. So that, we'll just kind of revisit this then. But again, why couldn't they? Unfortunately, the fun kind of stops here, because I think Florida State is probably going to drop their next 2 games after that. Up next, they travel to Raleigh to play NC State. And this, to me, is probably your toughest game of the season, your probably least winnable game. Because I think their defense is not maybe as up front is not as good as Clemson, but I think overall their total defense is as probably up there with Clemson. And they have a better offense than Clemson, or at least they did last year, and you would project them to be better this year based on returning production. So that's why I think it's just going to be a tough one for Florida State to win. Obviously, we know NC State is usually going to Raleigh. Carter Finley is usually kind of a snake pit for FSU. And so looking at NC State, they went 9-3 last year. They were 7-0 at home. That's not looking good. They returned 82% of their production. They are projected to win 8.5 games. A lot of people think they're going to win the Atlantic. I personally put a little change on them at plus 800 to win the Atlantic. They finally kind of got over the hump and beat Clemson. But there's no guarantee, because their last ACC championship was in 1979. They've only had, and this was hard to believe, they've only had one 10-win season in program history. So I'm sure, you know, when you have guys like Russell Wilson and Phillip Rivers in the past, you know, they didn't manage to do much there either. So are they going to fold under the pressure, the expectations? I mean, maybe not. I still think they win the Atlantic. I still think NC State is the team to beat this year because they return so much. They return 17 starters, 82% of their production, like we said. A lot of these guys are older upperclassmen who took advantage of the COVID year. Obviously, they return quarterback Devin Leary, who was great for them last year. He had 6 games with no interceptions, 6 games with over 300 passing yards. So he's a very efficient passer. He's had a 35-3 touchdown to interception ratio. I mean, the guy's just a good quarterback. He lost his leading receiver, Amika Emezi, who was very good for them, and he was a big body, veteran guy, but they return a lot of other people. Leary was also tied for first and lowest turnover worthy play rate and third in big time throw rate. So, I mean, this one's just going to be tough. You know, they return so many people. Of course, they lost their star left tackle. We know that. We saw him go in the draft. And they also lost their two leading rushers, one of which, who was their leading kick returner, and averaged 34.7 yards per return with 2 touchdowns. So that, I mean, to me, they're not without question marks. They still have some things that they have to answer during the season. They only returned 178 of 1,567 rushing yards last year. So, I mean, they were good, but they still have some question marks. Now, of course, I think, you know, I definitely think Devin Leary is going to be very good. He's probably going to build onto the campaign he had last year. But even then, they were 59th in total offense, 83rd in efficiency, 72nd in third down conversion rate. So, I mean, there's still some out there on the table that, you know, make NC State a gettable team. Where they really excelled was their defense, and this is why I don't like us to win this game. They returned 10 of 11 starters from last year, and statistically, they finished 14th in scoring defense, 21st in total defense, 3rd in efficiency, 7th in third down defense, 6th in EPA per run. They were also top 25 in pressure rate and explosiveness. And they had a lot of injuries that they had to work through during the season. We're still very good. So now they have a lot of experience depth on defense too. Now, of course, that's not saying that the NC State defense is 2022, you know, version of the Georgia defense we saw last year. They did give up over 400 yards in 5 games and 30-plus points in 3 games. So, again, they're one of the better defenses Florida State's going to face, but this team's not gettable. Florida State played them tough last year, closer than expected. If this game was at home, maybe, but this one's a tall task to ask. I think Florida State has a chance, but not a great one. Unfortunately, I think Florida State's going to lose this one. I think they'll keep it close, and I think they'll contend because they saw that they could last year. I think I'll take NC State here. Give me something like 28-17. You know, I don't think it's going to be really close, but I don't think it's going to be a blowout either. It's just NC State right now has hit their stride as a program. This is as good as they've been. So Florida State is not there yet. And I think that they're a more mature team. They're farther along, you know, in their program with continuity and everything like that. So it's just the programs are at 2 different stages right now. Next up, you have Clemson. They come to Tallahassee this year. I think it'll be another good game. Obviously, the headline of this game is going to be the fact that they no longer have Brent Venables. They also don't have either one of the coordinators that were there on offense when they won the national championship. But again, you look at they had their first quote-unquote disappointing season in years and still won 10 games because of that defense, because they're just that defense was that good. And realistically, when you look at their three losses, it was against the eventual national championship in Georgia and was a close game. They lost to NC State on the road in double overtime, and they ended up they lost to the team that ended up winning the conference in Pitt. So it's not like, you know, it's not like they're not still a good team. They have, I think the thing with Clemson, because yes, eventually, in my opinion, losing those coordinators, especially Brent Venables, is going to have an effect. There's just no way it doesn't. He's been one of the best coordinators in all of college football for a long time. And when you lose a guy like that and they just promoted from within, that's going to have effect in the long run. I just don't see how it can't. And now it's time for Dabo to earn his money. And he's going to have to prove that he can do it without the guys that, you know, he had helping him build success for all these seasons. And so when you look at their defense, I mean, it was good last year. And they think that they're going to have a even better front than they had before, which is kind of insane to think about. Maybe one of the best they've ever had, which is, you know, it's just they've had a lot of good fronts. So that's not that doesn't match up well for Florida State, who still has probably an average offensive line. Last year, Clemson's defense was top 10 in scoring, total defense, efficiency, explosiveness, finishing drives, pressure rate, EPA per run. They were also top 25 in havoc rate, third down conversion rate, EPA per pass. So, I mean, they're just a good top 10 overall defense. And unfortunately, you know, they just have a talent gap right now that I think is going to be the hardest thing to overcome. Obviously, their offense was a completely different story. You know, they struggled a lot last year. But just to finish up on the defense, they do have a lot of, you know, question marks there. They do have to replace two veteran linebackers, but people think their replacements are going to be even better athletes just with less experience. Their secondary is probably their biggest question mark on defense. They do need to replace three starters, two of which were first team all ACC corners. So that's really going to be the only kind of question mark for Clemson defense, which, you know, when we're a run first team or a run heavy team anyway, and you're looking at Clemson whose strength is going to be their defensive line, you know, I just don't like that matchup. And on offense, of course, they struggled last year with DJ coming in as a Heisman hopeful and just had a kind of miserable season. He had accuracy issues, took a lot of sacks. Their offensive line was pretty inconsistent when it came to pass blocking anyway. They do return four starters up front, so that'll probably help. But, it is still a bit of a question mark when the offense is still trying to find itself a little bit. And they're going to have a new coordinator this year, so, you know, we'll see how that affects things. Of course, they also lost their leading receiver in Justin Ross, which doesn't help. And, you know, Clemson could give five-star freshman Cade Klubnik, they could give him the nod if DJ continues to struggle. Now, Dabo has repeated it's still DJ's job, so, I mean, that's out there. But if you know you got a guy sitting there behind you, is he going to be forcing things? Is he going to be trying to do things that maybe he shouldn't? Kind of like what we saw, you know, maybe a little bit of Jordan Travis last year with someone looking over his shoulder the whole time. They were able to run the ball pretty good, and they returned basically all three running backs who produced for them a year ago. But their offense was 82nd in scoring offense, 100th in total offense, 84th in efficiency, 102nd in explosiveness, 83rd in finishing drives. And, you know, I mean, be honest, if it hadn't have been for the defense that they had, their season probably would have ended a lot worse. So, you know, you look at both of them, or you look at this team, they're losing their coordinators, but they just have more talent right now across the roster, obviously, than Florida State because of the way they've been able to recruit with the success that they've had. But, you know, I mean, there does appear to be some cracks in the foundation. We'll see how well Clemson can maintain now. They do, obviously, like we talked about, travel to Tallahassee this year. They're going to be playing a road game at BC before that. So, I mean, that's a very winnable game for them. Florida State, you know, last year they finally stopped getting blown out, which was a good sign. But, you know, had Jermaine Johnson not have shown out in that game and everything, defensive touchdown, and it just, I don't necessarily think it was as close as the score showed. But, I mean, they were within reach in the fourth quarter. So, you know, that's not to say that there's not a chance. They did hold FSU under 250 yards last year and put up almost 400 when they had a bad offense. So to me, I just think the defense is going to be too much, even at home. I think whether or not they fix their offense, they, you know, it's probably going to be a little bit better. But, you know, they do have a fifth-year kicker too. So even in the struggling offense, you know, he holds career records for field goals of 40-plus and 50-plus. So I don't think this is Florida State's year to beat Clemson. I think they are actively closing the gap. But unfortunately, I think this year they just still don't get that win. I think it'll be another closer one. I don't think it'll be a blowout like we have seen in the past. I'm going to go with Clemson here, something like 24-13. But, you know, if Florida State gets up for the game, they get him at home. We don't know what time it's going to start. If it's a primetime game or something like that, you know, Clemson's got an amazing home record. So I'm glad you don't play him there. And last year they weren't as good on the road. They were 3-2. So, you know, who's to say that crazier things haven't happened? But I don't see it this year with that defense. Next up is Georgia Tech. Obviously, Jeff Collins is kind of on the hot seat right now. They've not been able to put anything together. I understand that, you know, going away from the triple option, that's a tall task. But he's had three straight sub-500 seasons. And while, you know, Paul Johnson and the triple option might not have ever won anything significant, they were always okay. They always made bowls. So I think the seat is getting a little bit warm under him. They did make some wholesale changes on the staff this year, which obviously leads you to believe he probably knows it's getting hot too. So when you look at the Georgia Tech offense, it wasn't good last year, but you thought maybe coming into this year with Jeff Sims, who can run the ball well, and Jahmyr Gibbs, you got something to build around. Well, then Gibbs hits the portal and is now at Alabama. So, I mean, that was a monumental loss for them. He was their leading rusher, second leading receiver, and leading kick return. So, I mean, that's a absolute massive loss for them. And to make matters worse, they also lost their second leading rusher, third leading receiver from last season, and they only returned two starters on offense and 49% of their production as a team. So Georgia Tech, it's almost like they're in a rebuild within a rebuild, and it's just I don't think it's gonna bode well for them. Now they do have Akron transfer Zach Gibson, and I'm gonna butcher this. Clemson's backup, Tyson Pomacan, you know who I'm talking about. But he came over from Clemson, so they do have someone. You know, if he struggles again, they have someone with some potential behind him. But they were 95th in scoring offense, 93rd in total offense, 81st in efficiency, 106th in finishing drives, and 110th in pressure rate allowed. So, I mean, their offense just was all kinds of bad, and they lost most of their good players. They can still run it okay with Sims at quarterback, and they did add a few pieces through the portal, but, you know, it's going to be a tough season for them. And as bad as their offense was, the defense was even worse. They were 110th in scoring defense, 117th in total defense, 121st in efficiency, 116th in explosiveness, 110th in havoc rate, 109th in EPA per pass, and 120th in third down defense. And if that sounds painful enough, they also lost 8 of their top 11 tacklers from last season. So, you know, it's just they have two experienced linebackers returning, and they, like I said, they added some transfers, but it's going to be a rough season for Georgia Tech, especially considering they have a pretty tough schedule to start the season. More than likely, I mean, they start with Clemson, so that's obviously not going to go well, but the chances are they're going to start 1-4 with their only win coming against Western Carolina. But, you know, keep in mind, it was Jeff Collins and Georgia Tech that spoiled Mike Norvell's coming out party at Florida State. But this is a different time around. You know, this is a completely different game. And to me, Florida State wins this one comfortably at home. I like Florida State somewhere around 38-17 over the Jackets. Next up is Miami. This is a back and forth game. Miami fans sure do think they got something this year. And, I mean, rightfully so. They do have Van Spyke, who's a great quarterback, and he can be built around. And they did have a top 10 passing offense last year. So, I mean, there is reason to be excited. But they, you know, I saw where someone released their win-loss projection, and they had us beating Miami. And, I mean, they just piled on to say there's no chance and all this and that. But to me, when I break down their team, So you lose both leading receivers from last year, which were very good receivers for them. You had Mike Harley and you had Charleston Rambo, who were, you know, two of their better receivers, really all-timers at Miami when you look at their stats, and they won't be easy to replace. But that's not to say they don't return some pieces in the receiving game. They do have tight end Will Mallory, who's pretty good. Their offensive line is their tackles are solid. They were 13th overall in pressure rate allowed last year, which was very good. But they do have some concern on the interior. And so you might have some offensive line issues there. Obviously, Cristobal, you know, his history is as an offensive line coach. So, you know, they might be coached up, but they still have some questions until they get the guys in there. I mean, I know Miami fans are hyped up about their recruiting right now, but those players don't do you any good this year. And when you look at Cristobal's history as a coach, we know he prefers a run-first offense. And people will think, oh, well, good thing they have Tyler Van Dyke because that's going to be where their success comes this year. But in a run-heavy offense, even when Cristobal had Justin Herbert at quarterback, who, I mean, obviously Tyler Van Dyke is projected to be a good quarterback, but we know Justin Herbert is a good quarterback. And even with him, over the seasons that he had him, they only threw the ball on average 46% of the time at Oregon. So if you're going to have, if your strength is a passing offense, but you're a run first offensive minded coach, I mean, that doesn't really make a whole lot of sense. And then when you look at their coordinator, I looked at his numbers while he was at Michigan, and one season they ran it above, or they threw it above 50%. The other two seasons that he was there, they threw it even less than Cristobal did at Oregon. And when you look at their running backs, of course, you return Jalen Knighton and Cameron Harris, who are not bad backs. But last season, I mean, it wasn't their strength by any means rushing. They finished 97th in rushing offense, which, of course, is not a big deal when you have a top 10 passing offense. But, you know, you might need more out of them this year. They were 61st in efficiency, 42nd in explosiveness, 50 in third down offense. So, they did put up over 400 yards in 8 games last year, but they have a lot of question marks. When you lose your top two targets for Van Dyke, they act like he's guaranteed to have the same success this year, which he might, but you never know. And then you also look at their running game was kind of mid last year. They got some questions up front. They got a run-heavy-minded coach and offensive coordinator, and your strength is your passing game. I mean, to me, when you look at that, that, to me, leans advantage Florida State. So when you look at their defense, it was okay, but it was far from great last season. They were 82nd in scoring defense, 75th in total defense, 102nd in passing defense, 42nd in efficiency, 97th in finishing drives. You remember they had like 1,000 missed tackles. And so, I mean, you get Kevin Steele as the new DC. They got a whole new staff over there. He does have a pretty good track record as a defensive coordinator. You know, their secondary was suspect at times last season, but they had a lot of inexperienced guys who all returned this year, so they probably will be better. Their linebackers, they were kind of an underwhelming group. They have to replace both starting defensive ends and an 8-game starter for them in the middle who left from the portal. So, I mean, they have plenty of question marks. Their defense gave up over 400 yards 6 times last season and over 500 yards twice. So, I mean, there's a lot of meat left on that bone for them to be able to need to improve on. To me, when you look at the things that we just talked about, and, of course, Miami, I mean, of course, they do have some reasons to be excited. I'll give them that. But you've had one 10-win season in 20 years. And even then, Cristobal, he had a good record at 35-13 at the Power 5 level at Oregon. That's very respectable. That also helps when you inherit a first-round draft pick quarterback. And so against ranked teams, he was 6-7. And without Justin Herbert, he was 1-4 against ranked teams. So we'll see if this highly profiled staff really does make that big of a difference for them. Because to me, when you look at the roster, you look at the talent they have right now, and you look at the way they might tend to game plan, I mean, tell me why Florida State can't go down there and beat them. I know it was a close game last year. And, you know, I'm sure they'll probably be fine in the future, but to me, this is a very winnable game. I think, obviously, depending on how the initial part of the season plays out, you know, Miami will probably be favored at home. But, again, Florida State, They won the game last year, and I think they're going to be a lot better team this year. Going on the road, this, you know, this is the one game that Miami fans do show up for. I think it's a toss-up here. I think this is another one of them games that I'm on the fence about. It is, of course, a rivalry game, so it's always going to be close. It's always going to be a good game. But, again, I just see another win here for Florida State, or at least a very winnable game. So, to me, I think you could maybe chalk this one up to Florida State, something like, you know, who knows, 21-20, something exciting like that, maybe 31-30, a thriller-type game. And I already know Florida State's going to get up for this game, so I don't think it's going to be an issue of coming out flat. And, I mean, obviously Miami does have some weapons, and Tyler Van Dyke is a good quarterback, but I think they're gettable by Florida State if they show up and they play their A game. Of course, you know, it's still a toss-up, but I wish it was at home again this year. I think that does help a little bit, but, you know, I still think Florida State can pull this one off. ESPN matchup predictor has Miami winning a 74.5% chance of winning, and to me, I think that's a bit too generous. This is a 50-50 game to me. I don't think it's 75-25 by any means. So, you know, you never know. You just never know in rivalry games. You never know what can happen. But I do think I like Florida State. Again, I like Florida State in this one. But, you know, they have to show up and they have to play. And they have to play at a high level because this isn't going to be easy. Miami's going to be pumped up and ready too. Next up is Syracuse. And, you know, this one, unfortunately, this has trap game written all over it. I know that there was a prediction for them to lose to Syracuse on Twitter, and people came and absolutely tried to rip the guy for it. You know, I don't think it's a bad prediction. I don't necessarily agree with it, but when you look at, you're coming off a game like Miami, it's either going to be an emotional win or an emotional loss, and you have to travel all the way up to New York for a sleepy, boring game that's probably going to be noon or 3:30 or something like that. But at the end of the day, if Florida State can just avoid the trap game, if they can avoid coming out flat, I think this is obviously a very winnable game for them. Dino Babers needs to have a good season at Syracuse. He's 29-43 in six seasons, hasn't made a bowl since 2018, and they were very oddly inconsistent last year. For instance, they lost to Wake, Florida State, and Clemson by a combined 9 points. And, you know, really, for Syracuse, losing to Wake and Clemson by a combined 9 points is pretty good. But then, at the end of the season, they ended with three straight losses to Louisville, NC State, and Pitt by a combined 79 points. So, they're only projected to win five games this year. The matchup predictor gives Florida State a 61% chance. They were only 3-4 at home, which wasn't exactly great. And to be honest, they may have an interim coach by this point. Who knows how interested they're going to be. And I think that this is obviously a winnable game, but Syracuse, they are challenging to beat at home sometimes. On offense, they had one of the better running games in college football. They have a stud running back in Sean Tucker. He was 12th in explosive run rate. He leads all returning backs in yards after contact from last season. And he really is the heart of their offense. He's a game changer for them. Their quarterback, Garrett Schrader, we saw him last year. He's a big bruising runner, 6'4", 228 pounds, and he is the other half of a legit rushing attack. He ran for 781 yards and 14 touchdowns last year. So they're going to run the ball. They're going to move it. They had the best rushing offense in the ACC and 16th best in the country. Unfortunately, that came at the cost of an abysmal passing offense. And Schrader doesn't have a lot of experience at the position because he's kind of new to the quarterback spot, and he'll probably get better with more experience, obviously. But, I mean, he still has a long way to go. As a starter, last year for Syracuse, Schrader had four games with under 100 yards passing, four games with zero passing touchdowns, and five games with an under 50% completion rate. They were 121st in passing offense, 106th in EPA per pass. And he doesn't really get a whole lot of help from his receiving core. Only one receiver broke 300 yards last season, and they just don't really have a clear threat anywhere in the receiver room. They didn't really add anything in offseason via the portal that would make you really have to focus on their passing game. They were 113th in pressure rate allowed and 107th in sacks. So even when they do drop back to pass, they really can't pass block very well. So, I mean, they got a veteran center who started 60 consecutive games for them. They did bring in a new offensive coordinator, but they're going to be able to run the ball. But outside of running back and a running quarterback, I mean, they're pretty deficient in talent everywhere else on the offensive side of the ball. And this is so much like a lot of other teams with Malik Cunningham at Louisville, with Sam Hartman at Wake Forest, and even some instances on Florida State where if something were to happen to Sean Tucker, there goes their whole offense. And so Florida State does play them deeper in the season, and you never know. Now, their defense was actually pretty good last year. They were 19th in total defense, 32nd in havoc rate, and they have a good linebacker group, one of the better ones in the conference. They have a veteran secondary, but they did lose five players up front, leaving them with only three scholarship players that had any sort of playing time of any significance. But looking at those numbers, losing up front, I mean, they're going to have a hard time creating any pressure, which is an excellent thing to hear when you have a kind of average offensive line like we expect. So this may be one of their better games as an offensive line unit. In some other aspects, Syracuse was also 108th in turnover margin, 121st in starting field position on offense, 119th in average field position on defense. And so, I mean, they struggled in a lot of areas. Of course, they have some pieces to work with on defense, and Sean Tucker is a force on offense that, you know, it's going to be hard. He's going to be hard to stop. But there's just a lot of gaping deficiencies in passing, blocking, receiving. Defensive line is going to have to be rebuilt from scratch. Syracuse has a tough schedule this year, so it's not like they're going to cakewalk right into the FSU game. I mean, they could be battered and bruised by the time it comes. They could have a bad season so far. So when you look at it, I mean, last year, the Syracuse game was where FSU ended its losing streak. It was a 33-30 close battle. It was in Tallahassee. And, I mean, I definitely think that you do lose the home field advantage. I hate going to Syracuse on the road just because, like I said, it's a boring atmosphere. There's not a lot of fans. And it's just, it has trap game written all over it. But for Florida State, while you can't afford to overlook anybody, this is that type of game that you have to start winning to get back to where you belong as a team like Florida State. Syracuse has done some things in the past. You know, ask Clemson if you don't take them seriously, how that works out. They have got them before. So you can't overlook them, but you have to start beating this type of team if you want to get back to where Florida State needs to be. And I definitely think this is one of the winnable games. I'm going to go. I think it is going to be a little bit closer than we want just because, like we said, it is a trap game. But I still think they're just a better team, and I still think Florida State's going to win. Give me something like 34-28, 31-24, something in that area. Next up, you got Louisiana, the Raging Cajuns. They had an excellent season last year, 13-1, 8-0 in the conference. They're currently on a 13-game win streak. They were 5-1 on the road. And it was an absolute great season for them. However, they are literally half the team that they were last year. Obviously, we know they lost Billy Napier, their head coach, because he's at Florida. He was their play caller. And so that's a huge loss already. They played one game against a Power 5 team last year, and it was against a 5-7 Texas team, which they lost. It was their lone loss of the season. Not that that's shocking, but, and again, I understand we lost an FCS team last year. That aside, you still have a team that was 13-1, group of 5, and lost to a 5-7 Power 5 team. So it's just that level of talent is still there. That gap, should I say, that talent gap is still there. So when you look at that game, according to PFF, again, you know, whether you put a lot of weight into that or not, that was by far their lowest graded game of the season. And so when you look at their outlook for this year, we already covered they lost their head coach. They did promote from within, and they're probably going to, you know, do a lot of the same things that they did last year, but you lost your play caller, you lost your defensive coordinator, you lost a ton of impact players from last season. On offense, they did average 31.1 points per game, which was 45th in the country. They put up right at 400 yards or more in 8 games. And, I mean, those numbers do sound really good. But then when you look at, you lost your play caller, you lost your starting veteran quarterback who accounted for all but 143 of their passing yards. He was a talented runner as well. When you include him and the back that left, 2/3 of their rushing production departed between the backs and the quarterback. They returned 900 of 2,900 yards of offense last season, and it was already kind of looking grim. And then they also lost four starting offensive line. And when you lose players like that and that amount, it's just, it's hard to come back from that. It's hard to have a repeat season. Now, it's not a completely clean slate. They do return all but one receiver who did depart for LSU. They do bring back a quality senior running back who had 851 yards rushing last year. But can they overcome all of those losses that they had on offense? And it's going to be hard. And so on defense, they return just five starters. They have to replace two of their top three tacklers and leader in sacks. Now, they do have some experience returning, and it was a pretty good defense last year. They finished 11th in scoring defense, 22nd in total defense, and 2nd in turnover margin. They have a good passing defense that held opponents to a 33.5% passing success rate, which was 8th in the country. Again, you're against group of five teams, and they do have some good special teams too. They do return a senior kicker who is 90% on his field goals, and they do have an all-conference punter. The thing, too, is this is going to be the 11th game of the season. I'm not sure what game it is for them, probably close to it. So they're going to have some time to get the new pieces worked in and figured out. But when you lose that many pieces, this one, I think, last year would have made me extremely nervous. But this year, with all the holes, and just I think Florida State's just obviously a better program. You get them at home. Just don't look ahead to Florida. That's it. That's the big thing. Don't look ahead to Florida, because if you overlook this team, they have the potential to beat you. But to me, I think this one is obviously going to go to Florida State. Let me get something like 41-20, something like that. I think it's going to be a nice win for Florida State right before they head into the Florida game. Obviously, we know Florida State then finishes the regular season with Florida, who's also going to be a bit of a new-look squad this year after they parted ways with Dan Mullen. Obviously, as we just mentioned, they brought in Billy Napier, who had a 13-1 record at Louisiana last year. So I don't think I'm not going to say he's a bad coach. He has a good coaching record. But as we've seen ourselves, success at the group of five level doesn't always translate to the power five level. That still has to be proven. Good staffs don't always reproduce good results at new stops, which is why, to me, Miami needs to pump the brakes until they see it on the field. And so back to Florida. So he went 7-7 in his first year at Louisiana before they ran off three straight 10-win seasons. So my point being, he does have a good record, but it might take him a little bit to get Florida to where he wants them to be. He himself even said that they needed an infusion of talent because they were lacking at some places. And some people have them finishing really bad. I've seen some things as bad as 4-8. Some people think they can surprise. I think it's kind of middle of the road. I think they're going to have around a 500 season. But they do have some potential pieces to work with. But they still also have some questions too. On offense, you got Anthony Richardson, who's probably going to be taking over at quarterback this year. They did have Jack Miller III from Ohio State, but I think I saw where he got injured. But, you know, he had Emory Jones last year, who he was a good, capable runner, which helped them out a lot, but he threw a ton of picks. He had 13 interceptions, 3 in the Florida State game. Anthony Richardson really kind of seemed like he should have been the starter the whole time. I'm not really sure why he wasn't. To me, he was good enough to build around versus taking your chances on Emory Jones. But, you know, that's why Dan Mullen's not there anymore. So in limited action, he did flash, but he's still far from a polished passer. In 2021, he only had 63 passing attempts with a completion percentage at just 58.7% with 5 interceptions and 6 touchdowns. So obviously, that's not great. He's got a long way to go. He had a turnover-worthy play rate of 6.5%, which is pretty high. And when you look at the other starting quarterbacks around the conference, and as a runner, he's a big guy, so he runs well and he's hard to take down. He had 8.3 yards per carry, which was 2nd in the FBS last year. Of course, it's unclear how he's going to perform as QB1 for them over the course of an entire season, because he's only ever seen limited action and he's still been very inconsistent when he is in. But you can obviously see he has enough upside that if he does take off and he does turn into what they need him to be, they could be pretty good on offense with him at the helm, but that still remains to be seen. And when you look at their rushing attack, Emory Jones, he accounted for 817 yards last year. So while he may have thrown it to the other team a lot, he was good at running the ball, which helped keep their offense alive in a lot of situations. they also lost their other two leading rushers and only return about 30% of their production from last year. Now, Napier did bring a solid back with him from Louisiana, Montrell Johnson. He accounted for 841 yards and 12 touchdowns last year. Again, you're talking about a group of five guy who now has to translate and produce on a Power 5 level. And, you know, that remains to be seen. This year's receiving group looks to be kind of a pedestrian group. They did lose two of their three leading receivers to the portal. You know, you combine that with a raw quarterback, and they're probably going to have to lean heavily on their run game. Their offensive line, they returned three starters, and they also added an experienced guard who followed Napier from Louisiana. And they're an experienced unit who is probably going to be kind of, you know, like FSU, average to above average, but they've not really been impressive. They've had issues with blown assignments and whatnot. So, I mean, we're not talking about like a Wisconsin-type offensive line or something like that. On defense, they were middle of the road in most categories. They were finished in the 50s in efficiency, explosiveness, pressure rate, and finishing drives. They were 73rd in scoring defense, 85th in rushing defense, and 86th in havoc rate. So while they do have some pieces to build around, and they do return eight starters from last season, I'm sure they will probably be improved because Mullen never really had good defenses while he was there. He always touted like, oh, we put up this amount of points. Oh, we put up this amount of yards while the defense struggled. And so they may get better, but they still have a lot of question marks. And, you know, in my opinion, they're still a shoe's throw away from being a dominant defense. But when you look at last year, this game was obviously a huge letdown. And, you know, depending on which way you look at it, of course, Emory Jones throwing three picks really kept FSU in the game. And Jordan Travis also missing time didn't help either. But to me, I think across the board, Florida might be a little better as far, maybe don't have as many impact players, but I think they have a lot of experience and decent players across the board. I think they'll be fine with Napier moving forward, but like we said, it's going to probably take a little bit. And this is going to be kind of a rare Friday night game in Doak prime time. They've already locked that in. I think it's going to be an electric atmosphere. And, you get Florida at the last game of the season. So, obviously, they're going to have time to figure some things out. They're going to have time to get some experience in the new system and whatnot. So, I don't think it's going to be like LSU where you're catching a new staff off guard. A lot of people have us losing this game, and in my opinion, I don't necessarily see that because you get him at home. Like, if you were in the Swamp this year, last game of the season, Florida's rolling, Anthony Richardson turns out to be who they want him to be, you might have a hard time. But to me, in year three under Norvell, you should be more consistent, and you should be able to beat a team who's in year one of their own rebuild with, you know, unless, obviously, Anthony Richardson's like Tebow 2.0 or something. But if he's as inconsistent as we've seen in the past and with the question marks they have at home on a Friday night, which is going to be a crazy atmosphere, I already know it, I don't see why Florida State can't win this game either. To me, this is another toss-up. I think they will be looking for revenge from last year. But, you know, this is another toss-up game. And really, so when you keep score at the end of things, now that we've covered every single game, when you keep score, we're looking at somewhere in the, to me, the ceiling, rather than necessarily give a, I think Florida State is going to finish this, I think it's more appropriate to say, I think if Florida State stays healthy, Florida State plays up to their potential, and they don't have letdowns consistently, I think Florida State's ceiling is 10-2 with losses to Clemson and NC State, just because I don't think Florida State can block their defenses. And that's just going to be too much to overcome. Like I said, both of those programs are in full stride. Maybe not Clemson, but I mean, they still are a pretty good program. So I do think that those two games are the least winnable games. And then just about every game other than that, besides Duquesne and maybe, you know, Louisiana, is probably a toss-up game. I think Boston College, I'm a little more confident in that pick, but, and possibly Syracuse, but a lot of these are toss-up games. So on the flip side, if FSU comes out flat, if they take forever to get in midseason form or whatever, and they just, or say these receivers don't live up to the potential that we think. They have to dig into the depth chart. The offensive line just isn't as proved as we want them to be. Then, I mean, there's nothing stopping Florida State from also going 6-6 or 7-5. And I know that's not what we want to hear, but they still have to show it on the field. I'm starting to buy into this team, and I think they can be much better, especially with the things we talked about on offense and seeing the way they've improved, and not only, you know, on the field but in physical condition working with Storms. I think they have the potential to get to a good number of wins. I think there's probably going to be a letdown somewhere. There may be something that happens injury-wise or something that costs them. Hopefully not, knock on wood, but I do think Florida State's probably going to finish somewhere around 8-4. I would put the losses, like I said, at NC State, Clemson, maybe most likely Louisville on the road, Wake if they have Sam Hartman, and we'll just have to see on the other ones. But I think Florida State, their ceiling is very high this year if they come out and play like they can. If they don't, it could be a very disappointing year. I still think they finish above 500. I still think they make a bowl. And, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how it plays out. But I am excited about what they can accomplish. I hope you are too. I know this preview ran a little bit long, a lot longer than I wanted to, but I really just wanted to dig into the schedule and show you guys why I have the prediction that I have. Because in the preseason, I was kind of like, okay, well, 6-6, 7-5 maybe, because you got some really good teams on the schedule. But then when I started digging deeper, I looked at a lot of the holes that they had, and I felt like the potential for this team to have a better season went up a lot when I started looking at the other teams and the holes that they had to fill and the deficiencies that they had. So that's why this one went a little longer, because I wanted to just kind of give you guys a view through my eyes of what I'm seeing and why I think Florida State has the potential to win 8-9. I don't want to say 10 games, but a ceiling of 10 games. Again, it's going to come down to how much they improve up front and out wide more than anything, because they just didn't get almost anything from their receivers last year, and that has to change this year. You can't make Florida State a one-dimensional team and they load the box and force Jordan Travis and everybody and this offensive line that's going to be kind of average to just power run over everybody. Norvell is back to calling plays this year, and you have Atkins as offensive coordinator, which can call to the strength of the offensive line, which I like. And so, again, Florida State has a high ceiling. They also have a little bit of a low floor, but I think it's better than we've seen in the past, as long as things go right for them. So with that being said, I guess we'll go ahead and wrap it up here, because we did run so long. But if you guys stuck around, I really appreciate you guys listening. I hope that you guys got something from this. I hope this gives you a better idea of what the schedule looks like and what Florida State could do. Like I said, we're going to learn a lot about this team in the first 2 weeks. If they struggle against Duquesne, and, you know, maybe get smoked or something by LSU, we're probably going to be in for a long one. I just don't see that being the case this year. I really don't. And if they can start 2-0, maybe even 3-0, I'm going to feel really good about what this team can accomplish. You guys make sure to follow us on social media so you can keep up with us during the season. I'm excited to start actually getting to cover some football games. I'm going to try and get on a more consistent schedule with the podcast. I'd like to do at least maybe 2 a week, like a preview and a review type thing. And so you guys make sure you tune into that. Go ahead and subscribe so you don't miss any episodes. And then make sure you check our website for updated content. And like I said, just get with us on social media. You can get in on the conversation. We're really active over there. Let me know what you think about our win-loss record. I'm going to post it on social media here in the next day or two, so I'd love to see your comments and see what you think. And that'll do it, guys and gals. We are at, it is game week. It is time to strap it up. It is time to show what you got. All the off-season talk is over. All the records are 0-0. All the scoreboards are 0-0. And everybody, every team has a chance to prove what they're made of every Saturday. And Florida State has the same opportunity that everybody else does. So as much as I tend to pump the brakes because of the things we've seen in the past, you got to go into it with clear eyes and a clear mindset and just think that this team can be improved, and I think we'll see that this year. So with that being said, we'll catch you guys. Probably first one will be after the Duquesne game. We'll evaluate what happened there, and thank you for listening. I hope all you guys have a great day, and hopefully you guys who attend the first game have a good time and get to watch the first win for Florida State to open the season since 2016 in blowout fashion. And then we'll move on to LSU, and I hope to see some of you guys down there. Thanks again for listening, and go Noles.